Previously on Lost.
Do you really think all this is an accident? You think we crashed on this place by coincidence? Especially this place? We were brought here for a purpose, for a reason, all of us. Each one of us was brought here for a reason.
Brought here. And who brought us here, Jeff?
Morse?
Subway, do you know who I am? I'm one of the Oceanic Six!
You gotta find me, John. You gotta find me. And when you do, you'll find him.
Who?
Jacob.
I think we did the right thing, Jack. I think he wants us to come back.
Two players. Two sides. One is light. One is dark.
I see you in another life, brother. We have to go back! We have to go back! We have to go back! We have to go back!
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 4, Episode 8. Meet Kevin Johnson. And I have a question for you guys. What do you order from room service when you're sojourning off island? My name is Dave Gonzalez. I'm one of your hosts. And I'd have some good old steak, asparagus, mashed potatoes, because no one's killing Mikhail's cow on the island.
My name is Joanna Robinson. And my answer is pretty boring because it's the same thing I order for room service, even though I don't live on an island most of the time, which is I always get Eggs Benedict, because I think it's because I don't know how to make hollandaise sauce. So I just let the hotel make it for me. So the only time I ever eat Eggs Benedict is hotel room service. The end.
And I'm Neil Miller. And if I were on the island for a long time, as we're assuming Tom has been, I would order as many French fries as they have, like all the French fries. Bring me several plates of French fries.
Son, you may have misheard me and heard a lot of French fries. But I said, bring me all of the French fries.
Mm-hmm.
That's at Parks and Rec. Hi, guys. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This podcast, it's an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island for the very first time. Each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, there's a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes and avoids all spoilers. And then there's a second section that we call the storm. It's a storm of spoilers discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. Thank you guys so much for being with us 4 seasons and 8 episodes already and listening to the podcast. We hope you've been having as much fun as we have, both like reinvigorating our relationship with weekly television and with a community of people while we've been quarantined. I'm not a huge fan of how this week's episode uses suicide. So, hey, we're more together than we are alone in fandoms, and please by all means seek help from people if you're ever feeling like you need that help, and don't put a crux of your very important life on a fiction like Lost is silly, but we take it very seriously here. If you would like to support the show besides just listening to us, and thank you so much for doing that, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you can subscribe for bonus content such as access to our Slack. That's available to everybody who becomes a Patreon subscriber. You get bonus podcasts, at least one a week, from your three hosts talking about something besides Lost. Sometimes we do mailbags. Sometimes we do one of those every month where you could ask us questions. We do watch-alongs of Lost episodes. We do book clubs. We do movie clubs where we watch things together. We just watched Blast from the Past, which is a 90s movie with Brendan Fraser and Alicia Silverstone. I got to have Warm Dr. Pepper through it. It was all very great. And one of those bonus podcasts even has somebody who's not on The Storm on it, because Joanna Robinson and Kristen Russo are feeling like the first time with a bunch of different movies. I believe we're still in fantasy rotation, right? Have we? No, fantasy closed out. Joanna, update me on Feels Like the First Time.
Yeah, we finished Fantasy. We are currently brainstorming. So you can listen to our before and after Fantasy series. We are currently brainstorming holiday picks. I've never seen Christmas Vacation, so Chris is probably going to...
Wait, what?
Yep, I knew. I was like, and then Neil's going to go, wait, what? I've never seen Christmas Vacation, so Chris is probably going to make me watch that. And I need to figure out what I'm going to make Chris watch. But we're trying to come up with some holiday treats for December. So if you have any opinions, you can always tweet at us at Storm Podcast or email us hosts@stormpodcast.com. Your feels like the first time ideas for what we should do. I'm so sorry. I'm a little distracted because I have angered the Martin Scorsese fans on Twitter. So I will be closing that window. All right. So so that's, you know, that's something you could do to engage with our bonus content. We will also be this week doing something really special with our Patreon subscribers that are in our Slack. We are watching, as we do every week, the next episode of Lost, which is The Shape of Things to Come. No need to wait 5 weeks between this episode and the next episode, as they did back in 2008. But we're doing it on a very special day. We're doing it on Neil's birthday. So come hang out with Neil Miller.
Yeah.
And enjoy The Shape of Things to Come.
It is kind of funny that we both had birthdays on Saturdays this year.
I know, and the year where you can't go outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Good use of a Saturday birthday, 2020. So that's some stuff that's going on. We've got, you also can send us a review. We love to hear some reviews from you guys. Here's a new one we got this week from someone who goes by Over Here Librarianing on Apple All right. Podcasts. 5 stars. I mean, that was not a disrespect to being a librarian. I was just having difficulty saying the word librarianing.
Librarianing.
Yeah. 5 stars is a great time to revisit Lost. I tried this podcast back when it was covering Game of Thrones and it just didn't click for me. I think I didn't have enough genuine affection for Game of Thrones as a series. Lost, however, is another story. This is like, I've never heard someone who was like, Storm of Spoilers, Thrones, not for me, but Lost. Yeah.
Lost, read.
I love it. Lost, however, is another story. I've only seen the show all the way through once, but my spotty memory of what happened is the final season, what happened in the final season is tied to my own happy college memories. The time the power went out during an episode and we all lost our minds, getting way too attached to various characters. And when a huge and loud crowd watched the finale in our school's beloved basement music venue. I think longtime Lost fans and newcomers alike will find the host informed, engaging, and just fun. Joanna, Neil, and Dave keep me company on my commute, walking the dog, or cooking dinner. I love all the corners and the fact that the hosts give all my favorite characters the airtime they deserve. I'm also grateful for the sheer volume of content. Many happy hours of listening. So thank you so much. Glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, do you guys have a college memory of watching a TV finale? I have one. I'm just curious if you guys have one.
I don't think I have a college memory of watching a TV finale, but I probably have a couple. Well, other than Game of Thrones, maybe not. Maybe I don't have any good ones.
I wasn't super into it directly during college, but I think the year I graduated, no, sometime after college, I did start like a TV club. And I was in a room full of people who had a cookout on the fire escape for the Sopranos finale.
Oh.
And the cut to black and everything maybe cemented my love of television finales that Lost, you know, propagated.
I had friends visiting from out of town when the Friends finale aired. And I wasn't like so much of a Friends like fan that I cared about being home for the finale. But we went to a bar and it was like showing in the bar, and it wasn't like the bar was silent and watching it. It was just like showing, you could hear it, but like it wasn't like an event that everyone was like watching the Friends finale in this bar. But then like slowly everyone just like started watching it. And then like I just will forever remember being in a bar with a bunch of people, like accidentally having an event watch of the Friends finale in college. So, yeah.
I was just going to a bar. Now I'm watching the Friends finale.
Now I'm invested in whether or not Rachel gets off the plane. So, you know, so leave us a review and we might share an unsolicited memory with you. You can also send us an email. We got some great emails this week. Thank you guys so much. So let me hit a couple. I'm going to start with one that I told the guys about before we started recording. I didn't tell them what it was. I just said it was an all-timer. It is titled Baby Desmond. And it says, "Hello, lovely humans. I have been a listener since the good old Super Stormy Game of Thrones days and the beloved off-season tour. Lost is one of my favorite shows, so when you announced the rewatch, I could not have been more excited, except for that time Dave mentioned the book Raptor Red, because seriously, I've never heard another person mention that book in my entire life. Anyway, I've been meaning to share my very short Lost story with you for a while, but another listener email finally gave me the kick in the butt to do it. It in January 2020. I was extremely pregnant with my second child, and we had not yet picked a name. One night I watched Flashes Before Your Eyes, and the next day I had the baby. When the doctor laid him on my chest, I took one look at him and knew his name was Desmond. Without your podcast, Lost wouldn't have been on top of my mind. I can honestly say I don't know what he would have been called. Maybe Griffin? I was listening to way too much Blank Check at the time. Side note, my Desmond has a big brother named Locke, but he is named after the Scott Lynch book, The Lies of Locke Lamora, not everyone's favorite protagonist, and protagonist is in bold. John Locke. During both my maternity leaves, especially the first one, your podcast has been a lifeline to the world beyond parenthood, which can become so all-consuming, although apparently not for any of the characters on Lost. Each week, I feel like I get to hang out with three hilarious, intelligent, interesting people who make me feel like me and not just a mom. Thank you for all that you do, and here's a picture of baby Dez. Hashtag button watch. Lou. This baby is so cute. Oh, button watch, because he's wearing a little button down. Oh my God, this baby is so cute. I'm going to put it in a place for you guys to see. Anyway, I think it's an all-timer because I think we get partial credit. It's mm-hmm. us and Henry Ian Cusick sharing same amount of credit for yes. the name Baby Desmond.
And saving Griffin Newman from the pressure of having a baby named after him for having a podcast about movies.
I bet there is a baby.
There's Griffin. A Griffin Newman inspired Griffin baby.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's a Dave and a Neil. You know what I mean?
That's like, delightful.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, that would be more pressure. At least it's a character from the show. So that's really more on the show.
Yeah, and Dez is so much cooler than
great
like
stuff.
Putting a seven in Dave. That's dumb. Dez is a great nickname.
Hold on. Okay, I found the
Don't name babies after me.
I found the JPEG. Oh wait, I almost put it in the wrong channel so that everyone was gonna be like, what's this baby doing here? okay, here's baby Desmond, just so that you guys can see how cute he is, and his little button watch.
Aww.
Oh,
wow, that's a significant button corner.
Yeah, that's almost all the way down. That's barely hanging
this,
on.
This child senses danger.
So thank you so much, Lou, for that email. It was really sweet. And I've heard that before from moms, young moms, especially when you're sort of like at home all the time with the baby, that it can be easy to sort of like feel like you're, I don't want to say only a mom, because obviously like being a mom is a huge thing, but just sort of like losing touch with your identity beyond momhood. And so it's nice to have touchstones to that. And I'm really gratified that we can help provide that. I never thought that anything I did could do something that important. So thank you so much for that email. All right. This one comes from Rebecca. It's titled, Where's Libby? I mean, we know where Libby is in this mm-hmm. episode, but we'll get there. And she says, hello, longtime listener here. I'm emailing to say I just realized Cynthia Watros appeared in an episode of Gossip Girl. Both Gossip Girl and Lost are my top five favorite shows of all time, and I'm currently rewatching both to live my spirits. I know Dave has a weird affection for Gossip Girl. I don't know where that came
from. I watched
from.
Every single episode of Gossip Girl. I've decided to own it.
It's weird to love Gossip Girl. It's just like I wouldn't peg you, Dave Gonzalez, for a Gossip Girl.
When people are like, I like Dan Humphries, I'm like, sit down, we're having coffee. And you are wrong.
In Gossip Girl, I'm on a flashback episode where Watros plays a younger version of Lily Vanderwoodson's mother. From now on, when I get sad about Libby's hasty departure from Lost, I'm just going to remember the alternate reality where Libby became a wealthy socialite.
Do you want to make that? You know what makes that so much sadder? Is that episode was supposed to be a backdoor pilot for an entire spinoff, and we could have had Libby mom raising future Gossip Girls as a whole other series, but it didn't fly.
Since this is my first time writing, I might as well add that I love, love, love your podcast. During the Game of Thrones days, I loved Dave's Lost references and was overjoyed when you decided to do a rewatch podcast. Thank you for being a comfort during these difficult times. Thank you, Rebecca. So we're doing pretty well on the email front. Okay, so we've got one from Luke. That I'm going to split. He split into Common Storm, so we'll revisit the Storm section a little later on. But Luke writes, coming to the end of second lockdown here in the UK and feeling a bit Desmond's circa his introduction to Lost, so I'm going to blurt out some random ideas / queries / observations and do with them what you will. Related to Meet Kevin Johnson, not Stormy. Does Michael Espy really live up to the hype the show set up a couple episodes ago with Ben's "you're gonna need to sit down" act break buildup? And if not, what character do you think would have been more shocking? Do you guys have a good answer for that? Who could have been future Walt?
He says you're gonna want to sit down to John. So it's like, what is the most shocking thing to John Locke? And I think the only thing Helen. More shocking than Michael. Helen.
Oh, Helen would have been good crazy. One.
Yeah.
Oh, Randy Nations. His dad, back from the dead again.
They used to grow pot on the West Coast, but now they're a freighter crew. It's your ex cult.
The from that same episode, the agent, was he FBI?
Justin.
Yeah, Justin. Yeah,
what was his name?
Yeah. The actor's name is Justin.
Right.
Yeah.
Agent Justin.
Anyway, if you guys have another answer to who would be more shocking, who John would need to sit down for, please do emails. His mom, Susie Kurtz. Why not? Boone. It's dead Boone.
It's Boone.
Oh, mm-hmm. I was just thinking about how much I miss Boone. All right. So, and then Luke says, you danced around Harold Perrineau being in the credits since the start of the season, but do you remember if you noticed it the first time you watched the show? And can you think of any other annoying times a show reveal has been given away by its credits? I'm going to fact check what I think mine is. I don't remember noticing Harold Perrineau in the credits at the time. Do you guys have any, like,
I am pretty sure I did not. I have no memories of reading the credits until I like went to film school for television, at least, because it's like they're nestled in amongst plot. It's like a whole bunch of things I kind of didn't really. I was very much like a TV watcher, like give me the fiction. But like, you know, the most I think I'd watch the credits up to that point was to see the end tag on the X-Files change every episode. But I wasn't like paying attention to the names.
So, do you have one?
I don't think so. I don't actually remember the Harold Perrineau thing being a thing as the season was going along. It's in the opening credits too. So, but somebody had to, right? Like somebody on a message board somewhere, I'm sure, was like, hey, this is weird. Even our Slack were very eagle-eyed.
It was the prevalent theory. According to some recaps I read, contemporaneous recaps I read this week, they were all like, just as we suspected, it's Michael. Like, they all knew it was Michael. So. Okay, I thought I remembered something special happening around an episode, and I was double checking whether or not they left this person out of the credits just to protect him. And it's true. It's a late stage episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer when Anthony Stewart Head had already left the show, and he comes back at the end of the episode. And Joss Whedon wanted to keep his appearance a surprise, so they left him off. Like, they didn't do special guest star Anthony Stewart Head at the beginning of the episode. So when Giles shows up at the end, you're like, Giles! And then it's cut to credit, it's like, special guest star. And we're like, yes! It's Anthony Stewart Head! So that was one. But it's happened on Thrones. I want to say it's happened on Game of Thrones before, maybe. Though that can't be true, because they don't put guest stars at the beginning. I'll have to think about that. But I'm sure it's happened. Where I've been like either excited or like, oh, I wish I didn't know that so and so was in this episode. Mm-hmm. Game of Thrones
did like a whole summer long one that didn't involve the credits. It was just involved hiding Kit Harington from the media, which was by far the peak annoying of this trend.
I don't remember it being a huge spoiler, but I do remember it for like Fringe sort of signaling that we were returning to a plot line, right? They're like, special guest star, you know, like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, back to two dimensions or whatever. And anyway.
No, yeah. And I know some of our commies, and I've done this too. I just, maybe with Buffy. I don't know what show I used to do this with, but I've definitely watched shows where I'll put my hand up over the bottom part of the screen during the opening so I don't get spoiled from a guest star.
That should be the option when streaming, not this skip intro bullshit that, you know, guest stars. Gains me. Yeah,
Spoiler credits.
Hide credits.
All right, and then Luke's last spoiler-free question point is, in Crazy Theory Corner, I remember some online comments at the time of airing that the coma guy in Michael's hospital room / dream was Alvar Hanso. Can't find reference to this on Lostpedia, but the way the camera lingers on / repeats the shot on him is a little odd. Is it supposed to be referencing or setting up something I'm missing? Not to my knowledge, but that is exactly my favorite kind of theory. Mm. This tiny detail must mean something. And then the show creators are like, no.
Nah, it's just a guy.
This week's episode with the Libby hallucination, that hospital scene?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They actually did shoot an extended version of that where Libby would have put the towels down and then blood would have started coming out of her thing. So I wonder if that weird edit is just them trying to make up some time where they would have had an additional shot.
I read about that they were like promos or something. That there's the image
like
of her covered
the
in blood.
Thing.
Yeah, exists. Yeah. Okay. And then,
but also we don't know where Alvar Hanso is. So as far as I know, that is Alvar Hanso.
It could be. All right. So that is that. And then one last email, and then I am done with emails for the com. All right. Never mind. This email starts with, please do not really read this letter on air. So I'll just forward it to you because it's a great email from someone who was in the fandom at the time.
Well, fair enough.
But never mind. So that means I am done. So let us see if there's anything else that I want to say about anything else. Nope. You can go to stormpodcast.com to find the latest. We have not picked our December movie club movie yet, but we will be conferring and figuring that out. It's Neil's month to pick because it's his birthday month. And that's about it. Come join us in Slack. It's a fun, chill place to be. But in the meantime, Neil, what happened on Lost this week?
Oh, yeah. We finally get to meet Kevin Johnson in an episode directed by Stephen Williams, friend of the pod. This episode is written by Elizabeth Sarnoff and Brian K. Vaughn. It aired on March 20th, 2008. It takes place on days 96 and 97 on the island. We're going to have plenty of talk about the timeline in this one. But first, on the island, Team Locke has a community meeting back in Dharmaville, after which Ben convinces Alex, Carl, and Danielle to head out into the jungle toward the temple, which is a secret place that is not for outsiders. We'll come back to that one. On the freighter, Saeed and Desmond seek some answers from this guy that they just met, Kevin Johnson, who is really just Michael, which leads us to our flashbacks. In flashbacks, we learn about what happened to Michael after he left the island. After returning to New York and telling Walt maybe a little too much truth, Michael makes several unsuccessful attempts to kill himself. After one such attempt, Michael is stopped by off-island Tom, who explains that he's not going to be able to kill himself because, quote, the island is not going to let him. Tom, who likes to indulge himself while off-island, explains how Charles Widmore staged the Flight 815 wreck and that Michael is being recruited for a secret mission. He's to go undercover on the freighter and destroy it, preventing Charles Widmore from finding the island. Once on the freighter, Michael attempts to fulfill his mission but finds out very quickly that Ben has other plans for him. Instead of blowing up the ship and killing everyone, Ben wants him to make a list and do some light sabotage. Ultimately, this story doesn't go over well with Saeed, and he turns Michael into Captain Handsome. To be continued on that front. It all ends out in the jungle, where Alex, Carl, and Danielle are ambushed. After Carl and Danielle are both killed, Alex gives herself up and admits to being Ben's daughter. Fun fact, Michael is in this episode.
Woo!
Yay!
Also, secondary fun fact, this episode includes the second longest flashback thus far in the series. The only longer flashback is the other 48 days, which is an entire episode of flashbacks. This is the closest they've come to doing an entire episode of flashbacks. But, yeah, we get a little freighter time. This week's calm question to start us off. We're going to be talking a lot about the timeline here. So, first, I think we need to establish some traditional logic, which is, what is the earliest date that is appropriate for putting up Christmas decorations? And I'll start by saying that this was a hard and fast rule in my household. It was always the day after Thanksgiving when my mom would do it. She would always do it either the day after Thanksgiving or like the that weekend, depending on, you know, having to work. So I'm curious as to what you guys think is what's do you have a rule for that, Joanna?
I always get my tree the weekend after after Thanksgiving. So I agree. It's like the weekend after Thanksgiving is when we get switch over to Christmas time.
So as early as like November 25th or 26th.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Dave, do you have?
I'm going to say for most times, I would say give one weekend in December and then go the second weekend. But I'm also a late taker downer. I like the idea of sort of extending Christmas decorations through the new year, like without a second thought. But in 2020, I heard a good argument from Matt Patches that he just put up his tree the day after Election Day. So November 4th, 2020 in 2020 is acceptable.
Well, Patches has a, like, it depends if you have like a living tree or not. Because the concern with the living tree, I mean, I know we're not just talking about trees, but the concern with the living tree is like, will it last till Christmas if you put it up the weekend after Thanksgiving? The last couple years I've lived in a place where the place where we put the tree isn't gets like got like full baked sunlight from all the windows. Mm-hmm. My tree this year is in front of windows again, but slightly less direct sunlight. So I'm hoping it doesn't get as crispy as my trees have been getting the past couple years. Also, I will leave my tree up until it is like a crispy, crispy eyesore, until there's just like needles everywhere and all that sort of stuff. Like producer Diana, when we used to live together, like we would shamefully put our tree out on the curb in like February. That's a thing that we've done. So it's probably not gonna what's gonna happen this year, hopefully.
When do you think Penelope Widmore takes hers down? Do you think she seems like a late takedown person? Cause she's really into Christmas.
Yeah, like January 5, mm-hmm. I think is okay. When Penny takes her tree down.
And maybe Penny just has a whole other separate room that's just constantly Christmas, and it's only when she's allowed to go in that room.
Oh, so she answered the phone in her Christmas room.
Yeah, because it's close enough.
I believe it. But the problem for this episode is, it's not just like okay, I can accept that maybe Michael's mom is an early Christmas decorator, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she's got her house bedecked early on. The hospital, though, is super Christmassy. And I feel like hospitals don't get Christmassy until like mid-December. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Mid-December is too late for this timeline because the freighter is off island at that time, which means Michael needs to be on his way. Neil, can you explain this timeline to me in a way that makes sense to you? You seem kind of okay with it.
Well, I did until I started saying it out loud earlier. Okay, so day 68 is when Michael leaves the island. Day 68, November 28th, Michael and Walt leave the island. And then over the course of maybe the next 2 weeks, till about December 12th is when this whole flashback is supposed to take place.
How long does it take Michael and Walt to get from their little tugboat off the mm-hmm. island of mystery without any identification?
Without being detected.
Without any identification to smuggle themselves back into the country?
Well, I feel like this is one of those like Littlefinger Airlines situations where it's like they were back in Manhattan 24 hours later.
Okay. So 24 hours later, they're in Manhattan. They mm-hmm. roll up to Michael's mom's house.
Right.
And then Michael
immediately tells Walt
that night or on the tugboat.
Yeah, maybe like on the way, he's okay. telling Walt the worst thing Walt's ever heard.
No. Walt's like, "Dad, I'm cold. Why didn't you bring any blankets?" And Michael's like, "Shut up about the blankets."
All right. So Michael tells Tall Walt on the tugboat, Tall Crouching Down Walt.
Tall Crouching Walt.
On the tugboat. About the worst thing that he's ever done. Right. So they roll up to Mike's mom's house in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of November, let's say.
Let's say November 30th.
Sure.
Shall we? Okay. So then what happens?
So then December 1st, Michael starts trying to take himself out.
Mm-hmm. And all right, Walt, you stay with your mom.
Immediately. according to Lostpedia, which is usually pretty reliable, Tom's appearance would have occurred between December 4th and December 10th. So Tom was off the island for about a week. And then he gets back by, like, what, day 81? When does... That's one thing I didn't look up is... what day does Tom die on the island?
I don't think it's the day he dies. I think we see him on day 80 at the barracks. Because that's John Locke is walking around saying he might be the leader of the others time period, from what I recall.
So what's day 80 in December terms?
That's the 12th?
That's the 12th.
Yeah.
Okay, no, so
December 10th is day 80.
Okay, so he's in Manhattan until the 9th, and then he takes the red eye to...
The red eye to the sub station.
And then takes the sub to the island. Okay. So Michael starts trying to be unalive on December 1st, and Tom...
Wait, he can't take the sub back to the island. He takes another sub? Oh.
Well, they have other boats and stuff.
He rides the Dharma Shark back to the island.
He rides the Dharma Shark back to
December 9th.
He parachutes Aquaman-like. In from a satellite in space.
Okay.
Tom dies on day 91, looks like.
And once again...
That feels like a Trax.
Okay. And then when is Naomi parachute onto the island? It says days 84 through 85. Is when catch 22 happens. So let's say day 85, Naomi Dorrit parachutes to the island.
Mm-hmm.
And what day 85 is what in December terms?
15th.
The 15th.
The 15th.
Okay. So Tom takes the red eye and the Dharma Shark on the 9th. By the 15th, 6 days later, Michael and the freighter are already parked just offshore of the island.
Sure. Well, and that's so, like, Michael flies from New York to Fiji,
right?
And then gets on the freighter in Fiji, which can't be that far from the island, right?
We don't know.
That's the condensed one, because the last time we see Tom, he's still in the hotel, he's still off island, so that's the 10th. But Michael's at the boat because he's ditching the phone that he's talking to Tom on. So the last day Tom's off island is also the first day Michael's on boat.
Okay, which is day 80.
Day 80 at the earliest.
Is everyone at home tracking us? I hope you have your red string handy.
So Michael is on the boat by about December 10th.
The point is, guys, I'm just staring at a calendar the whole time we're talking about this. The point is, this doesn't work. I mean, if it works, it's like, it's a character journey that is silly. Okay, 2 weeks. So anyway,
well,
listen,
here's...
Michael's life—he goes through a lot in these like 2 or 3 weeks.
He's having a hell of a year.
I also
or hell of
the
a 3 months.
The one thing that really throws it off is that it opens with Michael crashing his car and having serious enough injuries to be in the hospital for several days. He recovers incredibly well.
I mean, that could be island magic because, as
true.
We find out in this episode, island magic extends off island, and we're going to talk about it.
That's the thing that makes me not like this episode's use of suicide as a plot device.
Mm-hmm.
Because in speeding it along, you're not stopping to like talk about, you know, the actual guilt that Michael feels. There's lip service that's paid to it. But the purpose of Michael attempting to commit suicide in this episode is to show off island magic. I can't think of a reason, because it's not like Michael hasn't been like low before. You could show me like a low Michael who's still trying to get things together and things are just not happening for him. I've seen that. I've even seen him get hit by a car before. Like, Michael can bounce back and not be like
Michael is very familiar with wearing a neck brace.
Exactly.
Because of all of the accidents in his life.
It's God. Just stretching it to, you know, him trying multiple times to, like, shoot himself or, you know, drive a car in, like, a certain way. It's using suicide for a dramatic purpose that doesn't play well in hindsight for me. It juices.
Especially with the two-week timeline. Like, when I watched this for the first time, it never occurred to me, because I wasn't, like, that kind of watcher at the time, that I was supposed to be watching, like, immediately post-Island Michael. And So if it's like, I've been back for a while, I can't put my demons to rest, my son, who I did this horrible thing to save, won't talk to me, I'm at the end of my rope, like, this is where I'm going to be. You know, I don't want to make judgments about when people are going to commit suicide and when they're not, but I'm just like, it feels tough for that to be like immediately where Michael goes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you're laying it out, like, you know, what's set up and then what's its purpose, like, the suicide exists to further the plot point. The plot point doesn't exist to deepen Michael. So yeah. it's a way of using him as like a chess piece, which isn't great. It's interesting in this season that we've seen the island, you know, extend its magic off island. This is another case where it could do that. But I almost feel like if the island's trying to keep Michael safe, there's a way to show that without him constantly trying to commit suicide in very visually graphic ways.
Where else have we seen, do you mean the flash forwards that we've seen island magic sort of extend?
Yeah,
itself?
Yeah, because we've seen Charlie maybe off island, and you know,
this was like the first time in the past, like in a flashback, that we've seen it, right?
Yes.
Here's something that Damon Lindelof said before the episode aired in an interview.
That we know that we've seen it, because I don't know if we would have known to be looking for island magic in the previous flashbacks. But go ahead, sorry.
That's fair. In an interview before this episode aired, Damon said, "You'll find out a lot about Michael." I think that's true. "But you'll also learn why Bearded Jack was unable to jump." So that means that Jack, who tried to commit suicide at the end of last season's finale, like, could not jump off the bridge, not because he was having second thoughts, but because the island wouldn't let him.
No. Wait, so is the island responsible for crashing that lady's car?
Yes.
Oh, dark.
I don't know. And then Damon also says, "And where the others are holed up," that's the temple, which we'll talk about in a second. "And according to those silly promos, apparently someone dies too." And so I sent this promo over to Dave and Neil, but there's an all-time very silly promo that ran for this episode that's like, and it's like, it cuts together the, like, freighter skeet shooting. It's the most deceptive thing you'll see. But it, like, cuts together the freighter skeet shooting with, like, Kimi and Omar. And then, you know, Michael saying, like, "Oh, I thought we were just, like, whatever." It's just, like, it makes it look like we're going to see a massive, like, Normandy
invasion.
Yeah,
like, Michael
invasion.
Is going to kill Kate.
But it's like, and someone will die. And it flashes to, like, all these lead actors, and none of them are Carl or Russo, who do in fact die in this episode. So it's just like a really, really dicey overpromise, underdeliver. I mean, I have feelings about Russo's death, and I do think it's a major death, but like, it's not, they're teasing like as if
she's not actually in the commercial.
Right,
which is
right.
Important.
And she's not in the opening credits. They're making it seem like Sawyer or Kate or Juliet or someone like that is going to die. So anyway, silly promos, not up to the creator to cut them together.
ABC television department, you crazy.
You've done it again.
The ratings were kind of going a little shaky around here as well, if I recall. Like, wasn't Gion like the lowest rated episode?
Of this season, for sure.
Yeah, every time that happens, it's interesting to see how promos react and how the official Lost podcast reacts. If you guys are the type of people who've been listening to the official Lost podcast as we've been doing our podcast, either online or through the feed that is in our Patreon, that is great. If not, I would actually suggest seeking out this episode, because the dudes are kind of punch drunk and they do a lot of like general question and answering. That I think is a lot more frank than it was before. Do you guys remember someone wrote in when we were speculating about Walt, and this might have been in the storm, but we read off a bit of a podcast where they just listed a bunch of characters and Damon said whether they were apparition, dead, or animal. That's this week's podcast. So I think the whole way through is kind of like a good listen if you somehow need more podcasting after this. But another thing I learned is similar to those promos, they thought that last week we knew who the Oceanic Six were officially. And even though we've talked about how, you know, we've been tracking them in our Oceanic Six detective corner and maybe in the storm alluding to when we would actually, you know, see all six in the same place, they kind of clarified that they thought they only wanted to keep it secret so that they could pull off the Gion flashback, flash forward thing. They wanted you to wonder if it was Jin. But right after Meet Kevin Johnson, ABC cut a promo that was like, the Oceanic Six, and showed all six. So I'll ask you, my podcast hosts, for Oceanic Six Detective Corner, are we gonna close it out this week? Should we just say the six? Since that's apparently what the showrunners wanted us to do.
Oh, I think that's a tough one.
I think that question is a little late, because like I think by you saying that, it's clear who the Oceanic Six are, which is fine.
Well, I mean, that's, I guess that leaves us with an option for the sixth slot, which is either it's Ben or Aaron, because that those are the two that we've seen. But they apparently did not even think that people would have questions about this.
All right. Well, I think we could just say that it's Aaron.
It's Aaron.
It's Aaron. Baby Aaron.
Kate, Jack, Hurley, Saeed, Sun, and Aaron. In the 5 weeks that originally went between Meet Kevin Johnson and Shape of Things to Come, which is next week's episode, there was the Oceanic Six promo with a shot of baby Aaron. So that's...
He's definitely off the island in the future.
Wild. He's definitely off the island.
I would not have done that if I were them, but okay.
Well, it also, I think it's like interesting to see how like right where this episode where they have to go and basically break the rest of the season because the writer's strike cut off production after Meet Kevin Johnson, they also sort of misjudged how they were rolling out their secrets. Like, we kind of knew that Michael was there because of credits, and they kind of like only thought the Oceanic Six would be a mystery because of this one episode, so they sort of over mystified it. But as of next week, we get to sort of see how they triage the rest of this season together. But,
and I think what changes here, and as we go through to the next half of the season, is it's less about who the Oceanic Six are and more about exactly how they get off the island.
Yeah,
which
is
that's the mystery now.
Because I think the thing that Joanna has been tracking the whole time is sort of the Oceanic Six are more dramatically relevant when their characters look like they're not going to escape that episode of Lost. Like when Hurley's still, you know, over in Camp Locke and Locke is like, nobody's getting off this island. How do those dots connect? So that mystery still alive. Who they are apparently was not supposed to be a huge mystery.
Okay. So the question is, how do Kate and Jack, who are somewhere in, are they back on the beach yet? Or I think they're
at the beach.
I think they're middle nebulous. Aren't they still like in the middle of it? Oh no, Juliet's back at the beach. Okay, back at the beach. How do Sun, Jack, and Kate get to the freighter? How do Hurley and Aaron get from to the freighter? Those are our questions, right? And Saeed's where he needs to be. Presuming the freighter is a launching off point. You know, maybe there's another way that they get off. Maybe they ride that Dharma shark that Tom took back.
I mean, it seems like the fastest way.
they pick some really good characters too, because Sun being there and Jin not being there, now we know Jin's dead, so now we gotta figure out that question. And Aaron being there without Claire seems like it would be a big deal, especially since fake psychic at the beginning said that she couldn't be raised by another. And maybe, yeah, that was the title of the show, but maybe it was also true, who knows. Lost magic.
Well, as long as he's not raised by an other.
Oh,
as long as it's one of the passengers.
Speaking of the others, should we talk about this, the introduction of the concept of a temple?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the temple is where the others have been. It apparently keeps them safe. It is a safe place only for others. And that is where Ben sent off the rest of the group when John Locke had to go kill his daddy.
So Cindy and the kids and Richard?
Safe in the temple.
Yeah. Are all in the temple. Okay.
Richard and then, like, whoever else is traveling in their party, I guess. Whoever
That's all I got. It's just Cindy and the kids and Richard, right? Aren't those the only others that we know?
Well,
right
I mean, those are the ones that we know. Where we know Harper's there, maybe. If Harper's
she's
still
not
alive.
Dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The judge, the Hydra
judge.
Yeah,
the judge. The really important judge. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
The old lady who was in Juliet's book club and seemed very concerned about
the rest of the book club
suburbia. Yeah,
the rest of the book club is in the temple.
They're holding the book club in the temple.
Yeah, what do you think they're reading in the temple edition of the book club?
Oh, I mean, it could be. I mean, what do you read in?
I mean,
a temple?
It's probably Slaughterhouse Five. Let's be honest.
Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Hold on.
Slaughterhouse Five works better. But Zen the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance is pink covered.
What's that horror movie that I think is based on a book where these like flowers, there's like these killer flowers on a temple? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Annihilation?
No.
Well, I mean, that's.
Sure. But let's say they're reading a future edition of Annihilation. Why not? All right. So that's the temple. Will we learn more about it? Tune in to find out.
Yeah, sure. Just, you know, keep it in your mind. The temple. Very important.
I mean, also, you don't have to keep it that forefront in your mind. We'll be back to it later.
Will we? Who knows?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's stick with some Ben perspective on this before we circle back, I think, a little bit more to the freighter. There's a question.
The ruins.
The ruins.
Yeah.
What do we think, as somebody who has watched this episode, what tragedies of this episode did Ben actually put into place? We know he's manipulating Michael because he gives a speech, reclaims not to kill innocent people, which seems like a lie to me.
Fact check.
Go for it.
All right, let's fact check this. Neil and I think, maybe disagree, or Neil is playing devil/Ben Linus advocate here. Neil, is Ben responsible for the death of the entire Dharma Initiative?
Well, I mean, yeah, but...
Okay. He didn't actually drop
that
guess.
Do we know that they were
guess.
Innocent?
I mean, he killed his dad, who we could say is not innocent. And
sure.
Technically, it was like Richard and the others who killed the Dharma Initiative, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Richard might have come up with that on his own.
Great. So we're clearing Ben of those charges. I mean, patricide, sure. But the death of some scientists, some hippie scientists, no. All right. How about Scott Steve, who got every bone in his body broken?
This is another one where,
Neil,
I mean,
is Ben guilty or not?
How are we to say that Ethan didn't independently come up with the idea to break all the bones in Scott Steve's body? That just seems like a very Ethan thing, you know? So, you know, maybe Ben's the guy who's like, you know, he's just like, go take care of it. And everybody like kind of knows what he means.
And he has plausible deniability, letter of the law, innocent. How about the original Henry Gale and his wife?
Did Ben kill them?
Did he?
Or did he find them dead? I don't remember.
I don't know. Did he?
I mean, were they innocent? Who goes ballooning in the Pacific?
For the crime of ballooning?
What kind of like CIA operative bullshit is that?
All right. So Ben Linus, by the letter of the law, is cleared by Judge Neil Miller.
Sure. And the judge who is at the temple. She also said Ben's
cleared. Yeah, also cleared Ben.
All right, so that leaves the crash, right, Dave? Well, two things. So let's talk about the crash, right?
Yes. Let's talk about the crash.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to talk about the crash. I want to skip to the end because the idea.
All right, you want to talk about Carl?
He sends his daughter into the maws of danger is one that I would like to discuss because I'm not exactly sure I support that.
Well, we also don't know who shot Carl.
That's true. But I mean, even in the idea of I'm going to send you into a place where there's going to be a lot of other crossfire from my fake temple secret assassin group, still seems super dangerous. Like, Ben's a smooth operator. I feel like if he were to like want to get Alex separate from Danielle and Carl, he would stage a kidnapping, not just start shooting. But then again, those shots were scarily accurate and quiet, so maybe there is a secret other assassin squad, another Team Six.
We have
so two. Your theory is that Ben intentionally sent Alex and fam out into the jungle, knowing that they would get shot?
I think there's two possible shooters here. One is people working for Ben who mm-hmm. killed Danielle. Like, let's say it's Harper.
Right. Hashtag temple crew.
Harper and the temple crew, sharpshooters that they are, kill Danielle Russo just when she got a new shirt and Carl. Or it's the freighter crew who we saw shooting Skeet early in this episode.
Who apparently have so many bullets that they can just waste them.
Shoot some Skeet. So those are our two options. And once again, that's like, so that's effectively like, was it Widmore or was it Linus? And that's the question for the other thing we're going to talk about, right?
So that's the crash. Yeah.
Yeah. So like which evil moneyed white man is pulling the strings here? Is it Ben or is it Widmore?
Tom's got the files, so we mm-hmm. all know, we already know Ben loves a good file, so I don't know if that speaks one way or the other, but there's
but also
on that side.
who has the most to gain from everyone thinking that Flight 815 was found?
And, wait, before we go to I just want to wrap up the Danielle and Carl thing, which is like, unless we're planning to come back to it, it's just like I like to believe Ben in the moment where he says your mother will keep you safe. I'd like to believe
right.
that he means that when he says it. And Dave, you're saying no matter what, whether or not it was actually Ben's people who shot or the freighter crew who shot, Ben sent Alex into danger.
And I think
so
that reads slightly false to me as like, yeah, right. I don't think he would do that. I think he still has enough island tricks up his sleeve that if he wanted Alex separated from Danielle and Carl, he would have found a better way to do that. That would have not involved bullets flying near his adoptive daughter or claimed daughter.
You don't have to call her. I mean, I guess. Never mind. I was just about to say, you don't have to Margot Tannenbaum her and say she's his adopted daughter, but I guess the situation here is a little dicier, so sure, adopted daughter.
Well, also, everybody talks about like straight father and daughter in this scene, and I'm like, I feel like Danielle would, again, be very much like objecting to Ben being like, I'm your father. Her being like, no, like, I knew your father. I feel like that would have come up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, so... I'm upset that Danielle's dead, that Russo's dead. Mm-hmm. That upsets me.
It's very abrupt.
It's abrupt. She's a tremendous character. I feel like she would have at least gotten a few shots in before she was taken out. That being said, and we've talked about this in The Storm before, I find something very tragic about this idea of tragic in a sort of a satisfying way. Of this idea of Russo has survived this long on this island by not getting involved in anything. And then Alex is, of course, the reason why she gets involved, because she cares about Alex. So she's drawn in because she cares about something again. And then she dies. That to me is very like Greek tragedy, sort of. There's something kind of beautiful and upsetting about that. Mm-hmm. But enough like cool women have died on this island that I'm just like, I'm still also kind of salty about it. But I like this idea that like the reason Russo has survived this long is by keeping her head down. She never would have been in that clearing if Alex weren't involved. So yeah. There's something kind of beautiful about that. But then again, I just have to
say. She was shot in the torso in the Island of Mystery for being a female. So.
Again. And also, I wasn't kidding. This is the first time we've seen Rousseau in a new shirt since we've met her. Mm-hmm. Since we've met her, she finally got a new shirt and she died. So, sucks. Anyway, and R.I.P. Carl.
R.I.P.
Like
Carl.
Nice, you seem like Carl's, a nice boy. Carl, yeah. I wrote in my notes, Carl wants to save the other Hufflepuffs because he's like, what about Hurley and Claire and the baby and that's it? What about Hurley and Claire and the baby? No one else.
Carl obviously not impressed with Sawyer and Miles.
No. He's like, nickname guys? No, thank you.
Nope.
Save the
Puffs. Which is weird because you think Carl would at least
he did have moments with Sawyer. Yeah. They were like,
oh, they were buds. That's right.
Like war buddies. They
dug coal together. Maybe Carl's like, Sawyer could take care of himself, but I'm worried about Claire, Hurley, and Aaron.
Okay, so let's talk about the crash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are two competing theories that we've heard. The captain last week is like, it's definitely Benjamin Linus. And this week, Big City Tommy is like, it's definitely Charles Widmore, and I have the documents to prove it. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, this comes back to the question of, like, who has the most to gain by keeping the island secret? So if we believe what Ben told us about Charles Widmore, in that he wants to find the island and turn it into, like, Healing Park, I think that leans toward Ben being the guy who would fake the, because he wants to keep the island secret from the outside world for whatever reason. Then again, Widmore does, you know, there's reason for Widmore to keep it secret until he's ready to, you know, debut his theme park.
Yeah, so you can't have people poking around Isla Nublar.
I will say that I would not put it past Ben to fake the documents that Tom has. Like, Ben's, you know, he's got so many different passports and he's, you know, he's got a lot of skills. And so the idea of him giving Tom a file full of, you know,
I gotta say, if someone
nonsense,
faked those documents, it was Mikhail.
Oh, sure. I mean, like I said, Ben has resources and mostly it's Mikhail and the shark. They're working together to fake the crash. It was actually Mikhail single-handedly dragged a plane to the bottom of the ocean.
And single-handedly unearthed all of those people from a mass Thai grave and put them in a trench. Yeah. The note that I wrote down the word Job, but really it's Trading Places, which is this. Trading Places, which is based on the story of Job from the Bible. And the story of Job in the Bible, if you're unfamiliar, is and this won't be the last time we talk about Job on this podcast for sure, but the, you know, God and the devil make a bet about the inherent faith or goodness of man, and God says, no matter what, like, my most faithful person will believe in me no matter what happens. And the devil's like, no, if you throw enough obstacles at a person, they will lose their faith. And so they play games with this guy named Job and throw all these horrors at him. And Job keeps his faith. It's one of my favorite Bible stories because God is such an asshole in that story. Not that, like, God, not that I think
it's
God
a real
is
Sky
an asshole,
Daddy moment.
But it's a Sky Daddy moment. There you go. Okay. So I just think that's interesting. And so then in Trading Places, if you've never seen this 80s comedy classic with Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, instead of God and the Devil, you've got these two rich old white brothers who are playing God and the devil, sort of playing God with these people's lives. And so I think about that. I think about Charles Widmore and Benjamin Linus, and, you know, if they're being positioned as these two powerful, infinite resources figures playing God or playing games with the lives of all these other people. That's just sort of the what seems to be positioning here. Do you have any thoughts or feelings or on that?
I mean, my bet's on Linus just because he has access to the Magic Island. Like, faking a plane crash seems like a big deal, and I know Charles Widmore is, like, a, you know, rich dude and whatever, but, like, the ability of, like, in a season where we've seen that this island can reach its magic out beyond its borders and has like a protective shell and all these things that Ben was like already aware of. How deep does Ben's knowledge of the island go is one of the big question marks of this season, and I'm scared to bet against him.
So it wasn't really Ben. The island came up with this idea independently to dig up 324 bodies and put them in the ocean.
Well, the question is, who's in control here, Ben or the island?
Well, see, if it was with island magic, then the mass grave is faked and the island just moved some bodies there. Like, I'm less concerned with the exhuming brown people bodies if it's island magic, because I guess that's just a lie. But if it is exhuming brown people bodies, that just costs like a shit ton of money. Mm-hmm. So
either way, whoever did it, they messed up by not giving the pilot his wedding ring, which is how Frank figures it out.
Exactly.
So
I love Frank Lapidus, who's like, who's like the embodiment of that, like tapping your index finger against your temple gif or whatever. He's like, mm-hmm. gotta get, you know, and he's like, he's very Charlie and Always Sunny with his red string. He's just like, they cannot pull one over on me. No,
you know me. I'm just the truther pilot who's joined the mercenary crew boat to the island of mystery. Would you like some cigar? I only brought a quarter.
Shout out also to Miles for being like, I know your name's not Kevin Johnson. Don't worry.
Yeah, how do you
about
think
it.
He figured that out? Like, did he talk to like a spirit that was around? Did Miles talk to Libby, who is following Michael?
Or a dead Fijian who definitely knows. He's like, that's Michael Dawson. Are you kidding me?
That's not Kevin Johnson. I know Kevin Johnson.
That is not Kevin
Johnson. It's clearly Johnson. Michael Dawson.
I like the idea of the Libby ghosts, because we, you know, get the idea that Miles can talk to ghosts, and then we do see Libby ghost on the ship. But she is dry, which would imply that only Michael could see her.
Mm. Though that's the deleted scene, I think, that I want is Miles, like, sitting in the mess hall of the ship having a conversation with Libby.
Be like, yeah, and then he didn't take the blankets? More blankets. Anyway, congratulations to Miles for successfully clamping down on a grenade for 4 days. And being able to walk and still make small talk with that lockjaw of his. Also, big moment. No? I was worried about mm-hmm. Miles.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I was confident that Miles was going to figure it out.
All right.
Too fun to die. The Miles Strom story.
I think we're good with non-Michael stuff, so we can circle back a little bit to Michael, because I definitely want to talk about second story digital baby Walt.
Oh, yeah.
Neil found out this factoid.
Well, the tallest of the Walts. The tallest. Because he's in the second story. But yeah, Neil, tell the listeners what you
think. I'm curious for our listeners, if you have thoughts, you know, Slack us, email us. If you noticed anything that was off about this, because this is a season one image of Malcolm David Kelly, who is the actor who plays Walt, and it is digitally placed in the window. So that is season one Walt in the window.
Not even season two Crouch Walt.
Right.
Nope. Season one babyface Walt.
Actual child Walt. Because I think, I don't know, maybe what they learned in the John, the scene where he shows up to Locke, that's where they were like, oh my God, he is too tall. We can't do it. So yeah, they digitally inserted him into the second story window. That's why, I guess he doesn't say anything. They don't have like a conversation like you would,
looks.
Maybe. He just like looks at him and, all right, bye dad.
Bye.
See you never.
Yeah, I love that. I love knowing that. I want to rewatch knowing that information. Mm. And to see
if you're looking at it closely, you can kind of, there's, you know, some early 2000s
polygons
compositing going on mm-hmm. there,
okay.
where it's the lighting's not quite right, but it's for its time, pretty good digital effect.
I've seen this episode so many times, and I told you that like he looked kind of young to me, but it never mm-hmm. it never occurred to me. Okay, anyway. Amazing. Love to know it.
Great stuff.
Michael pawns Jin's watch, which is very sad now that we know that he's dead. Which Michael, you know, doesn't know at the time. He just thinks he's stranded him on an island of mystery. Lots of guilt either way. Pawns the watch for a gun. But I think that all of that leads him to what Joanna has called Big Cindy Tommy. Because old Mr. Friendly's back, where you least expect him, off island this time. But I think it's interesting to bring in the person that took Walt away again as the person to talk to Michael. Interesting choice by Ben. Great choice by the show, because it really reminds you how much we've all kind of come along on Friendly. Maybe, you know, posthumously, because it's hard to hate a dude who got shot in the chest already. But he's back, and they make his sexual preference explicit this time instead of just a line to Kate with Arturo and some loving.
Yeah, I like the little payoff of the Kate, you know, when he's giving Kate her new clothes on Alcatraz Island. Hydra Island. And he's like, you're not my type. I think we all assumed, I remember assuming, and maybe we even talked about it when we did that episode, that it's like, that was the reason why. But it's kind of a fun payoff several seasons later to have Tom be like, oh, this is Arturo, I'm indulging myself. And it's like, all right, Tom, you go.
I mean, it's not just Arturo, which, like, bless Arturo and his button watch situation, but, like, Big City Tommy and his, like, coiffed hair, his beautiful gray sweater.
I bet he smells great.
Oh, like, yes.
He just looks like he wears some sort of great cologne.
I bet he, like, I don't want to make any gay stereotypes, but if Big City Tommy likes theater, I hope he took in a show or two while he's in the city. Like, I love Big City Tommy out here living his life, what little there remains of it. I mean, MC Gainey's so good. Tom showing up at this episode is one of my favorite things that Lost ever does. Because we get an Oscar winner Fisher Stevens episode. We get a lot of, like, fun dead people in this episode. Naomi's back. She has a slightly better wig. Like, all this stuff is happening. But but it's all about Tommy and Arturo for me. It's still very piss poor gay representation on Lost, because, like, this is the tiniest table scrap that we've had. But, you know, it was 2008. So I guess we'll take what we can get.
Isn't it not until he meets Miles that, you know, he interacts with an island character that isn't already dead? Like, the first freighter people that he meets them in, like, dead ones first. Yeah. Not exactly Death Order, because I guess he meets Minkowski before Naomi. But, like, it's pretty much everybody we meet in this episode is doomed, which is interesting considering the ones that it leaves out were supposed to be our flashback characters for the back half of the season, and then that plan just sort of changed. So I wonder, you know, no Faraday or Charlotte backstories yet, because that was supposed to be shunted in somewhere else. But it does sort of make Miles stand out initially until Frank wanders up and they're already going. But in that first boat scene, being like, oh, yeah, Michael's been talking to a lot of people that are like, it's all going to work out. It's going to work out bad for all of these people. Even poor Mr. Friendly, who's, you know, on top of the world having room service.
I mean, Tom did plenty of bad things.
Oh, yeah.
He did kidnap Walt.
And he shot Sawyer. So, you know, we're going to have to take the boy. Yeah, I love the sort of closing the loop of having Tom be the one to convince. And he does a great job. You know, like, if Ben wants to, like, question the efficacy of his various lieutenants, like, gold star for Tom. He got Michael against all odds on that freighter and back. And the motivator here in this episode, of course, is guilt and amends. It's an atonement thing, which I like, except for the fact that they refer to Ana Lucia and Libby as those two women, or two women. They just keep saying that it's like two women in a way that strikes me as like the crime is worse because they were women kind of way, which just irritates me a little bit. But anyway, that's just a minor feminist gripe. Two people. You kill two people. If it were men, it would be bad. If it's children, it's worse. But if it's men or it's women, it's bad. You kill two people, Michael. Mm-hmm. You did a bad thing.
You did two murders.
Even if one was like, oops, my finger slipped, and then Libby died.
Fuck. You accidentally murdered Libby, and you murdered a police officer.
It just occurred to me that Tom's having a much easier job of convincing people that they need to go back than Bearded Jack has. I wonder if he needs to just, like, you know, shave up and get some good cologne and be a little bit better on the cell. Have that little smile on your face when you ask that the gun misfired. Don't just interrupt somebody's basketball game or pull them away from her child she's adopted. Come on, Jack.
That's the thing about Tom Friendly is he's always been smooth. From the moment mm-hmm. he rolled up and said, we're going to have to take the boy, he's been a smooth operator. So, yeah, I love him in this episode. I love seeing him. I remember, like, if you would ask me what I remembered from my original viewing of this episode, it's Cass Elliot, another Cass Elliot song playing while Michael tries to crash the car. It's Tom Friendly being off island, and it's that fucking flag that pops up. On
not yet.
Because apparently Ben is also the Joker.
Or like Acme Corporation. Yeah. A real bummer moment for Michael. But I, you know, mm-hmm. like Carol Perrin's back. We're excited that he's back. We're gonna talk about this a little bit more in the storm. I'm glad that he's back. I think he's great in this episode. And I think this is a great story for Michael. Like, timeline issues aside, I'm convinced of the motivator to bring him back to the island. Like, what on earth would convince me if I killed two people to get my son off the island? What on earth would convince me to come back? And it's exactly that. It's the ability, the potential to make amends for the crimes you committed.
I don't think they pull off the, you know, it's almost like a misdirection. Like, don't think about the timeline too much. They don't pull that off unless Harold Perrineau comes back and just crushes it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to have Michael back. And I do think that this was apparently going to be the episode that premiered the back half of the season, not the ending of the first chunk and then a 5-week break before the next chunk. And I think you could kind of see that because we're presented with a lot of our core mysteries and they're at like a fulcrum point. We know who the Oceanic Six are, supposedly. We know Jin's dead. We know that Michael's come back to the island and we have these opposing views of who should you trust. Widmore, who we don't really know that much about, but it seems like you should not trust him, or Benjamin Linus, who we know a lot about, and you should absolutely not trust him. One of these two guys is out to get you, and they just got Danielle and Carl. Who could it be? Find out in 5 weeks. That's meet Kevin Johnson.
Well, I think also it makes the death of Rousseau, and once again, I don't want to undermine the importance of the death of Rousseau because Rousseau is a favorite character of mine and her death matters. But it makes the death of Carl and Rousseau in the jungle like unintentionally a 5-week cliffhanger. You know what I mean? Which is, I think, a little bit more weight than that sequence can bear. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. we're not going to be watching it that way, but like back in the day you had to. So
the wild thing about this episode, and I sort of got my brain all wrapped around this while I was writing up my recap, is that you don't actually spend that much time with the island people on the island. Like, it's just that little scene at the beginning and then the scene at the very end. So it feels like a storyline that if it were in an episode that had more room, we maybe would have gotten a little bit more of Rousseau and Danielle or of Rousseau and Alex and Carl. But it's very strange. Like, it's like this very strange bookend on this otherwise Michael intense episode. So,
but it is at least a stronger ending than, like, I don't know, Saeed narking on Michael to the captain.
Then the captain looks up and lost.
And boom. See you in 5 weeks.
Oh my God.
There is, you know, of course, there's this nice added tension to this episode because Saeed is basically like, you working for Ben Linus is the most traitorous, awful thing you could possibly do. And I will be doing it myself in the near distant future.
Lots of things are going to change between those flashes in the current life.
Something, one last thing I want to say, and this is something we talked about. I think we talked about it a little bit in the calm and a little bit more in the storm, but like this idea of like the captain of the freighter being like someone you don't want to talk to. And we were like, last week we were kind of like, what's that about? Since he seemed like pretty chill and cool. And then cut to this week where he's like beating the face off of a guy. So you're sort of like, okay, is this the like, you don't want to talk to that guy sort of captain sketchiness we were promised? I mean, I'm kind of on his team. With what he's doing.
Yeah. Still have no problems with the captain. Yeah. Like, even the thing he does at the beginning where he's beating the crap out of the guys, he's like, I'm not doing this to scare you. I'm doing this to save your lives. And it's like, wait, what? This guy's bad? So maybe he's not bad. I don't know.
Well, I think that means it's time to get to our corners. This week, Neil, do we have a Giacchino corner?
Oh, we sure do. This is a track from the season 4 soundtrack that appears in this episode. It is titled Michael's Right to Remain Wrong. It's all about father's rights.
Okay. All right.
All right, Giacchino.
Yeah, all right.
Sure. Why not? Our jungle mystery moment, Libby appears on the boat, and right before she does, not only do we hear an echo of that Mama Cass song from Michael's earlier suicide attempt, but we hear whispers off the island. That island, that magic, it's creeping. We got some magic creep.
This is a big episode for off-island magic. I mean, the whole not allowing Michael to kill himself thing, and the whispers, yeah. So, you know, what's up with this island?
Love to watch a magic creep, a magic seep.
Nice little magic creep. Mm. The Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to Carl's water bottle, which very dramatically signals Carl's end, but falling to the forest floor. Carl's water bottle.
Tough break.
Have you ever tested the endurance of an algae? He's drinking from an algae water bottle. Have you? Which was all the rage at this time. Have you guys ever tested the endurance of an algae?
Yep.
Me too. But I would like to hear your stories, Neil.
I've never shot one.
Okay.
Oh, like shooting. No,
I'm not talking about shooting.
I can imagine, okay, because the first like Nalgene water bottle I think I ever really remember getting was in like the 2007, 2008 range, and it was like at Sundance, because that's like that was the bottle they were giving away at Sundance. So I imagine there was like dropping it down a flight of steps and it survived. I seem to think that they are tough water bottles.
Oh no, they boasted that they could survive like going off. A friend told me that he dropped his off the side of the Grand Canyon and then hiked down and found it intact. But I have a follow up to that story. Dave, what's your story?
Yeah, Nalgene's, having your own Nalgene is like a Colorado rite of passage. So not only did I have them growing up, but when we moved back, I immediately got Java and our own Nalgene's. The most I was able to do one is my dad told me they had a lifetime guarantee because they couldn't be broken. So the closest I was able to do to break my first Nalgene to try to prove this wrong was first you freeze it and that causes it to expand, and that will cause a like slightly thinner crack that looks like maybe you could puncture it, but you cannot. After several times hitting it with like hammers in the weak spot and like baseball bats, it did not. I just had a lumpy looking Nalgene, but it held water just as it always had.
So I, for some reason, in like 2005, 2006, decided to start collecting Nalgene, because that was around the time when they start, like, it used to just be like gray or white, but at a certain time they started doing them in all these different colors.
Oh yeah, like the pinks and the blues.
So I had like a red one and a blue one and an orange one. Like, I collected a bunch of them like a dummy. And I also had heard that thing about like lifetime guarantee won't break, blah, blah, blah. So I made a bet. I don't remember what the stakes were, but I made a bet with someone and I was like, no, let's go to the roof of the 5-story dorm on campus and drop this Nalgene water bottle off the top and it will not break. And the person was like, I don't even remember who I bet. But anyway, he was like, deal. And it was one of those like be careful how you word things. Anyway, he took my Nalgene. It was my orange one, I know. He filled it with water. We went to the roof of the building. He dropped it off straight onto concrete, exploded. Completely broke. So I lost that bet. So, like, are Nalgene's durable? I mean, we don't drink out of them anymore, I think, because of BPA plastic. But are Nalgene's durable? Yes. Will they survive being dropped off the top of of a 5-story dorm with water in them onto concrete? No. And nor will they survive being shot in a jungle of mystery. R.I.P. Carl's water bottle.
All right. Our freighter crew check in. Same layout as before. Miles, Frank, Daniel, Charlotte, Keely, Omar, Creepy Doctor, Captain Galt. This time we have a whole bunch of red shirts. We've got some face speeding in people. We've got some additional Omar and Kimi gun enthusiasts, but no names. So we're going to have to come back to those if we ever.
How many beds do they have on this damn freighter?
I mean, it's a big freighter.
How many cockroaches do they have on that freighter?
All right. The Henry Gale Memorial, obviously a lie award, as we alluded to with our fact check, is Ben when he says, "Well, I'm at war. I'll do what I need to win, but I will not kill innocent people." I think you will.
I think I will. I do have a question about Desmond Hume Button Corner. Desmond in this episode is pretty funny. I think he has like one line, and he's just really just trotting after Saeed the whole time. But I think Desmond, I'm going to need to fact check this, but I think Desmond has done a new thing to style his shirt, which is roll up his sleeves. So he's not unbuttoned it further, but I think he's rolling up his sleeves now in an effort to give us more
just expose
arm.
More torso.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me fact check that. But yes.
There's a lot of really good quizzical looks from Desmond in this episode, because that's really his whole thing while Saeed and old Kevin Johnson are having a chat, is he just looks... contemplative. Charles Widmore. I know that.
Okay, I guess those sleeves have been rolled up for a while, according to my Google image search that I just did. But like, I feel like they were just like tighter than usual. I just felt like he was just trying. Henry and Cusick was trying to do more to get our attention since he had no lines. So he's just like, maybe if I restyle my shirt, they'll take notice. And I
maybe
did.
If they're looking
and
at
I
my
did.
Arms, they won't realize I've never met Walt.
I think where it's going to become more important is in the back half of the season after they come back from the break. Like, were there any adjustments?
Yeah,
to the Desmond look.
Button up or roll those sleeves down. Mm-hmm. We've heard the feedback, and the feedback is blank Desmond. We'll figure it out. All right, the Jungle of History moment is back after last week. We decided not to do Gion and decide to let, you know, Jin and Sun sort of emotionally hold that. We're gonna go back this week. To deciding who should kiss, you get to decide, actually, by voting at Storm Podcast. Joanna, who are our nominees for Meet Kevin Johnson?
All right, so we've got Carl, RIP, gentle Hufflepuff, and Alex. We've got the Captain's Fists and a deserter's face. He's just trying to protect him, but it's a lot of face kissing with fists.
I'm going to give you some face kisses with my fists. I'm going to say that more often. I'm not going to do it more often because that's assault, but I'm going to say that to people more often.
And then we decided that we detected a little like frisson of a flirtation between Naomi and Michael. They did a little accent corner of their own. And, you know, so
he spotted her as a Mancunian.
So in a better universe. Naomi and Michael leave the freighter, go back, and raise Walt together.
Sure.
R.I.P. Naomi. All right. So, yeah, a couple dead guys on this list. and to round out the dead guy list of Kistery, we've got Big City Tommy and Arturo, who we anticipate will run away with this poll. So those are your options. You can vote over on our Twitter, at Storm Podcast, to see who you feel like should or could or would or did kiss on this episode of Lost.
Our Charlie Pace Memorial Final Words Award does not go to Carl's, unfortunately. It goes to Rousseau's Can You Do That With Me? I Love You. I Love You Very Much, Alexandra. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3. No more Danielle. Very sad.
She calls her by her full name.
Alexandra.
That's how you know it's serious.
Yep. And I think with Carl, we might have to abandon the Carl's Coming Right Now Act Break Award. Or
well, it could be the Carl Memorial Coming Right Now.
The Carl Memorial Coming Right Now Act Break Award. Goes to Michael, who simply tells Saeed that he's here to die at the beginning when he asks what's on the freighter. And that's a big WTF headed into the commercial break. Before we get to the official podcast check-in, Book Club has a returning champion. I don't know where that came from.
All right. That's a new noise.
I've never heard.
No, wait, that's the
Is it Rick
the snipe hunt from Snipe Hunt from King of the Hill?
I knew when I wrote this down that Dave would get excited, but I didn't know it was like new noise excited. Anyway, as Michael is contemplating, once again, being unalive in his really sad apartment, he's watching some kind of game show. And in the background, you hear, the author of Slaughterhouse-Five. And the contestant answers correctly, Kurt Vonnegut. And then he's like, and what is the name of the main character in the book? And then it cuts out before we get to the answer, which is Billy Pilgrim. So we talked about Slaughterhouse-Five. We talked about in the concert. We talked about Billy Pilgrim coming unstuck in time. But this is just another background reference to that book, that character, that author. So, which is funny. I was just reading a Kurt Vonnegut. You know, it's always fun on Twitter when you come across a Kurt Vonnegut quote because they're always just like very like the person you wish you were is like who Kurt Vonnegut was. Anyway, I read this story on Twitter this morning where Kurt Vonnegut did some kind of, some kind of blue collar job, like when he was younger. And the guys he was working with were like, oh, you like sports, you like whatever. And Kurt Vonnegut's like, oh, no, I I'm in theater and I do music and I do this and I do that and the other thing. And they're like, oh, that's cool. Like, you must be really good at it. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not. I just like doing it. And the message is sort of like, do what you like. Who cares if you're good at it? And I'm like, thanks, Kurt Vonnegut. Anyway, what a champ. What a mensch. Okay, official podcast time?
Official podcast check-in. The official podcast is back. I already plugged it. I already told you you should listen to this one if you want to. But this one, I think, is especially special for Storm listeners. Because this is Carlton Cuse listing off characters and Damon Lindelof answering whether they are alive, dead, apparitions, monsters, or animals. And this one picks up from a very important entry for us. I'll be reading the part of Carlton Cuse, and you'll be reading Damon Lindelof. Here we go. Kate's horse.
We have this. This is actually a funny story. We have this board in the room with all the actors.
The writer's room.
In the writer's room.
Yes.
With all the actors who are on the show, all the Oceanic 815ers. But then all the sort of recurs like Penny Widmore and Charles Widmore. And
we have their headshots.
Yeah, exactly.
So we could keep track of who we have on the show.
And Matthew Abaddon and
Sawyer.
Basically, yeah. So everybody. They go onto a door that says deceased. Once they die, we move them over there. And then there's a door that says undead.
Yeah.
And on the undead door, there's only three pictures. One of them is
Christian Shepherd.
Yeah, one of them is Christian Shepherd. One of them is Yemi. And the other one is
Kate's horse.
Just a picture of a horse. So
Kate's horse is
undead.
Okay, thank you. That was good. Very well done.
Okay, follow-up question. Dave, did you actually listen to this exchange?
I did.
Did it sound like they were joking?
That it's the horse is undead?
Yeah.
It sounds like all of the answers they were giving here could have possibly been jokes.
Okay.
Although I do believe them when they say that there's a picture of a horse on the undead part of their writer's room board.
this story of the writer's room rings true to me, even though because of the way that they bring it up.
Well,
go ahead.
When we've brought it up before, because I have, like, from the start, I've been talking about Christian Shepherd, Yemi, and the horse being these, like, three figures in a separate category. I feel like some of our Stormy listeners have been like, I think they were joking when they said that. So I guess I will just take Dave's advice and listen to this episode of the official podcast so that I can hear tone of voice. But like, it's possible that they were just joking when they said that. But I like to believe that it's true and that Kate's Horse, Yemi, and Christian Shepherd were all in a door marked undead in the writer's room.
I believe that door existed, and I believe it had a picture of a horse on it. Whether or not the writers thought that was serious or not, probably not. But absolutely.
Next to it, it just said horse? Question mark.
It absolutely sounds like what I know of the writers of this show, that yes, there's someone, they thought enough about the show that someone put up the horse as a joke and they just left it up there. Like, absolutely feels real to me.
Somewhere on the internet, there is a picture of Damon and Carl in the writer's room, which you should not Google if you're Call Me, because there's some serious spoilers in there. But I'm going to have to go through this very closely to see if I can find the picture of the horse.
Yeah, see if the horse survived until that photo was taken.
Yeah.
But I'm into it.
Right,
going to say
season.
We're going to say Storm Cannon, Undead Horse. I'm into it until proven otherwise. I think with that, the rest of the things we need to discuss have to do with stuff we haven't seen on the show yet. So we will be back for the storm right after this.
All right, folks, the holidays can be tough at the best of times, but this is Holidays 2020. So my question is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Like, say, a pandemic? BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm suddenly obsessed with where Grand Admiral Thrawn is, and it's really... It's taking a toll.
Stressing me out.
The dyad discussions are back. Anyway, BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist who will help Dave sort out his Thrawn issues. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. This is professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. And also, as we mentioned, it's a pandemic. You should not be going outside. If you can get therapy at home, that is ideal. And this service is available for clients worldwide.
That's right. And don't listen to Mr. Friendly and throw your phone over the side of the freighter. You're going to need it because you could log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you could schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit through an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. Plus, don't be inside in these situations if you don't have to. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available, because BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
You can visit their website, and you can read testimonials, even, that are posted daily, including this one, which I found interesting. This is for a counselor named Joshua. Joshua has brought me an incredible amount of relief and comfort since we started working together. I was a little worried that a therapist wouldn't be able to handle the amount of baggage I carry with me, but Joshua is as patient, understanding, and helpful as anyone can be. I'm 100% confident that his help will only continue to help me grow mentally, with the most positive outcome possible. Thank you, Joshua. If you'd like to read more of those, you can visit betterhelp.com/reviews. And if you want to try it, you can visit betterhelp.com/storm. That's better, H-E-L-P. And join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. So to get a special offer for our listeners of The Storm, you can get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/storm. That's better, H-E-L-P.com/storm.
All right, now is the time of the podcast where we like to thank our small council, subscribers, Patreon folks. These are folks who donate at the $10 level or above. They get access to all of our channels, all of our bonus content. They watch weird hot Dr. Pepper movies with us on Sunday mornings, including some newcomers. We would like to thank Mariana Cuoto, Jeffrey D. Kurtz, Kristen Smith, Jenna Jardine, I put a little French on there. You let me know, Jenna, if that was too Frenchy for you. Denise Sheridan, Seth Pollock, Tracy Walker, Maria K.L., Patrick Wayne, Herman Crone Dale, Stuart Wynn, Erica Sandstrom, EW, thanks Entertainment Weekly, Nicole Havelka, Fahim Abrahim, Lauren Galbraith, Ali Karaka, Ryan Casas, Suniva Agard, and Jessica Parton. Thank you guys so much.
And I would like to add to those thanks Christopher Mack, Paul, Jennifer Carnevale, Alejandra Pozos, Sarah Finnamore, Nikki Hyde, Damon Van Buren, Michelle, Josh, Mary Henderson, Amara Luz, Seth Freilich. I'm going to just assume that I did okay or that he has forgiven me. Okay, good. Corinne Moll, Jessica Scott, Matthew Wilson, Sarah Cooper, Jeff Libby, Amy Harper, Brian, and Kat.
And I would like to thank the following fine human beings, including Matthew Munden, Mark Rodriguez, Jessica Trowbridge, Jay Forness, Patrick Grattan, Francis Adrian, Kevin Gonzalez, what's up, Kevin? Jay Maggio, Eric Procise, Arthur Wynn, Scott Rumsey, Richard Hoska, Tracy, Luke Sweet, Nate, Jason, Patrick Gallagher, Ryan, Timothy May, and Eric Manley. Thank you all so much for being members of the Small Council.
And we're back in the storm. Lock, you know, whatever. We'll leave this lock antagonist thing till the end of the season.
Well, I don't know. We should interrogate a few of the things Locke does here.
Okay.
All right.
A wild Neil has entered the chat.
Come at me, Neil.
Including the part that he gets immediately called out by Sawyer for, which is Locke making the big statement, no more secrets. I think is, on its own, antagonist behavior on this island. You can't just be like, no more secrets, because A, no one believes that. And B, you're going to break that rule in like 5 minutes.
I mean, I guess that's a good point. No more secrets is the most democratic attempting he's made to look his entire barrack situation.
How many of the people in the room do you think believe Locke when he says
maybe,
no more secrets?
Maybe Aaron.
Maybe Aaron.
Maybe Aaron.
And maybe
Aaron's
Carl.
Like, my bald daddy's real angry.
But even Aaron's like, I'm trying to get off this island.
Aaron's like, I'm not sure. I don't know.
I don't know
this,
if I trust this guy.
I'm one of the Oceanic Six, so pretty special.
Before
I'm
get
bummed that they like reveal, like, because I feel like there's tension, like when the helicopter is going to the freighter and like Sawyer's on the helicopter and you're like, and he jumps out, but for a while it looks like he's going to make it to the freighter, and in the helicopter is like Sun and Harley. So you're like, is Sawyer going to make it off island? And I guess we would have seen him before that. I don't know. I'm just kind of bummed that they were like, yep, now you know the Oceanic Six. Because I feel like there's still tension to be wrung out of that. You know
well, it's
I mean?
Like in the podcast, they're like, we don't want you to think that we're up to shenanigans and suddenly Sawyer is going to pop up. Like they literally say that.
Okay.
Like, so they wanted to basically signal that there weren't any shenanigans. I really think it was what I said in the calm, which is like somebody realized the ratings were down and they're like, hey guys, go out there and get your fans back.
Yeah.
And so they're like a whole bunch of, because another thing I wanted to bring up is in the podcast, I brought this up off air, but here in the storm is they talk about in the podcast how every season's, you know, like, oh gosh, end scene has like this secret name to it. Like Desmond blowing up the hatch is called the Hala, and Rattlesnake in a mailbox is what they called the scene where Jack met Kate on the tarmac and said we had to go back because they said the surprises of flash forwards on Lost would feel like a rattlesnake in a mailbox. And so they're like, at the end of this week's podcast, we're going to tease what season four is, you know, like big button scene is, and this is a podcast that's coming out before a 5 week break where we're not going to have any Lost content, and they're like, okay, here it is, we're going to do it at the end of the podcast, it is Frozen Donkey Wheel, all right, we're out. And listening to that now, I'm like, that's just basically like saying it's, we're going to blow up the hatch, all right, good job guys. Like it's kind of amazing that they're playing that fast and
loose.
They
don't ever call it the frozen donkey wheel on the show, right?
No, but then Carlton also says, another thing I could promise is we're going to have another large electromagnetic event. And you could hear Damon laugh right when he says that, like maybe he said too much. But then they just kind of go with it. Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, yeah, what other show is, you know, you won't see like heroes promising a huge electromagnetic event.
And then Damon's like, let's throw him off the set. Let's tell them that Kate's horse is undead.
Yeah. So it really is like a, the podcast is this like this weird tonal thing where it's like they're giving some stuff away, but then also like really trying to clear things up by joking. It's an odd podcast.
I guess I would be curious if we could, I don't know how to test this in the world, but if you could find somebody who really had no idea, you know, some super call me and just say the phrase frozen donkey wheel to them and see what they come up with. Because it does seem like kind of nonsense unless you have seen the
film. I mean, I think it's completely nonsense. And the only reason I think it would throw up any of our call me's is if anybody puts frozen donkey wheel in a calm channel, I'm going to side eye them very hard. It's like, yeah, come on, guys.
I meant to bring this up in the calm and I didn't, but I feel like Ben pretending to be Walt in order to get Michael to the phone, it just reinforces my that was Mikhail
the case
to
against
be Walt.
Ben.
No, the case against Walt being in the computer.
Oh,
Michael's like, I'll pull the old pretend to be Walt trick. It works on Michael every time. Also, maybe babyface. Second story, Walt was actually projecting himself from inside a computer. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, no, adult Walt never got off the island. Oh. Only babyface Crouch Walt got off the island.
Okay.
It's a whole different Walt. He's split into... No, I don't need to follow this. They're in the storm. You guys know what happens to Walt. All right. We got some notes here. The only one that belongs to me is Dry Libby Ghost? Because I think this is our only... Off-island whispers ghosts, if I'm correct. No, I mean, like, this is the storm. I think that's the only one, right?
I think Christian.
He's
Jack sees Christian, and then the smoke alarm goes off in his hospital. Yes.
But the whispers
with
it?
You definitely hear whispers.
Oh, all right. So there's one more whisper ghost. But I don't like that. I don't like, from a canonical standpoint...
Yeah,
that Michael's going to get trapped on an island just because he feels like it.
I will say this. Smoke detector Christian is my number one what the heck is going on there. A lot of people just chalk it up to Jack being on drugs, but we'll talk about when it happens. But that is my number one, what are the rules on this show?
But I do think this episode gives a lot of, groundwork to Lost 2.
Does Which Hurley not hear the whispers when he sees Charlie?
No.
Okay.
No. But we also, I don't know. I mean, is there enough precedent for Hurley seeing things?
Yeah, that... Hurley. I mean, Hurley sees ghosts in general. I know it's a little different. Yeah. I'm just, okay.
Well, I mean, this would also imply, I guess, that Libby got stuck on the island. Like, Michael gets stuck on the island.
Yeah.
Like, she was just too good to die.
I mean, she definitely died on the island.
But we also don't see her flash sideways, so that's where Libby's doomed to the middle ground of restless island spirit is what whispers mean. I'm just interpreting it based on the rules that I was told. It makes me sad that Libby never gets off the island.
Okay, I've got some. You want a full off island whisper report?
Yeah, give it to me.
All right, so we've got Meet Kevin Johnson, I think, is the first instance of off-island whispers. I think that is accurate. And then we've got in the finale, There's No Place Like Home, Part 1. When Hurley arrived home in a flash... Oh, he heard whispers before finding a coconut floor, but that's a surprise party. That's one of my favorite whisper fakeouts, is like Hurley comes home, he hears whispers, and there's a coconut on the floor. And it's because his parents are throwing him a surprise Hawaiian-themed birthday party. All right, I'm... Okay, in a flash forward, Kate awakes to noises in her room when the phone rings. On the other end, there are whispers in reverse. They may say the island needs you. You have to go back before it's too late, awaiting confirmation. So Kate hears some whispers on the other end of the phone. in season 4.
Hmm.
And then everything else seems to be on island. So,
all right. So Lost 2, it stops people from being able to die. They start hearing whispers and they start getting like fucking drawn to the island. I still think you're going to tip your hand if Jacob shows up in season 1 at all, but I do think that you could start pulling some magic into your Lost 2 premise by being like, the island can reach out and stop people from killing themselves.
I swear you hear whispers before Christian Schepter smoke detector, but it's not on the whispers page for Lostpedia, so we'll
have to investigate deeper.
Yeah,
we'll have to get down to the bottom of those whispers. I hear we got some Harold Perrineau quotes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much we want to get into. We talked about this a little bit before when Michael left the island in the first place in the storm, but like, how much do we want to get to? Maybe we'll save some of this Harold Perrineau stuff. I just didn't want to not talk about Harold Perrineau in earnest in this Michael episode because we're going to be so busy with all the other stuff that's happening in the finale when Michael dies.
Mm-hmm.
But as we talked about before on this podcast, like, Harold Perrineau was the main saltiness seems to be not that he was written out of the show in the first place, which he was, but that he was brought back and then abruptly killed off from his point of view. Let's do it now and save ourselves from running out of time to do it later. So he gave this interview where he was like kind of extra salty. And then he gave a low sodium interview to Entertainment Weekly. I think it's one of those damage control things where like ABC, which obviously had a good relationship with Entertainment Weekly, was like, can you interview Harold?
Can you do
Harold's
that again?
Harold's going to be chiller this time. Anyway, so he says, I wouldn't say I'm bitter. I'm just like the fans. And I got excited when Michael was coming back. I thought it was really significant when Michael dropped those people off with the others. I thought he was going to have something just as significant when he came back. I was disappointed that he didn't. He didn't get to make amends with those people and nobody got to see him try to neutralize the bomb. Walt didn't get to see it. Jin got to see it, but wasn't necessarily so mad at him. And Desmond, who Michael didn't know at all, was there. I was disappointed more than anything. Like the fans were disappointed. Like I think the fans were disappointed. And then, The journalist who's interviewing him, which is Dan Snearson, Dan asked him, like, if he knew when he was asked back, if he knew that he was going to die, like, shortly thereafter. And he said no, that he signed, like, he basically said, like, as in all the cases, you sign, like, a multi-year contract. So, like, mm-hmm. he was given no indication that it would be a short-term thing. And what we don't know, and I couldn't find any confirmation one way or another, is if this was their plan before the writers, you know what I mean? Like, were they going to do something else with Michael? And then they decided during the writer strike, let's have him die in this writer explosion. And like something that Dan, when he's interviewing Harold Perrineau, something that Dan points out is he's like, Michael does do something quite heroic. Like he sacrifices himself here. And Harold Perrineau's point was just like, I want to, you know, and Harold Perrineau, to his credit, is like, this might be actor's pride, but I wanted it to be like bigger. I wanted to be able to like have him, you know, apologize directly to the people that he impacted and all this sort of stuff like that. And I can see that, like, you know, we watched Romeo plus Juliet in our Slack movie club, and we know that Harold Perrineau, like, if he needs to do like a Plague on Both Your Houses big old death scene, that he really really can. And he doesn't get to do that. He just you know, blows a fire extinguisher until it runs out, and that's it for curtains for Michael. So this is the last Harold Perrineau quote that I would read. And like what he said at the time was like, in killing Michael, you're making Walt just another young black man growing up without a father. And that's just a stereotype I don't think we need to see in film and television anymore. And this is the last quote I'll read. He says, if I had known about how soon they're going to kill Michael off, if I had known, I think I would have asked if I could have a conversation about it. And then might have said, hey, these are some of the things that I think. What do you think about that? And executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse would say, this is how it's going to play out in the storyline, or not going to play out in the storyline. We find out things pretty quickly and then have to process it and go do work. I wouldn't have chosen it if it were me, but then I would have done whatever they said. They're brilliant guys. They have a fantastic show. The show's been great since we've been on it. It's going to be great when I'm not on it. They know exactly what they're doing, so I don't question that. That all feels like the make good with ABC part at the end. you know, but basically, it sort of reminds me of I can only call him Dr. Julian Bashir, the actor on Game of Thrones, who was killed.
Oh, yeah, who played played Oberyn's brother.
Yeah.
You used to know all those names, you book readers.
I think it's Doran, isn't it? I don't want to say the wrong.
Doran Martell.
I was going to say Doran. Prince Doran Martell. Anyway. you know, and then he just gets like stabbed and tossed aside, and he's like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do.
A character who at the time was still around in the books.
Right. So, you know, it's and not like any new books since then.
Yeah, I was going to say, at the time, like, the other book came out and then I missed it.
Remains around in the books to this day.
Harold Pownall is great in this episode. I kind of agree with him. I think it would have been more satisfying to see Michael have to reckon with, like, Hurley. Or, you know what I mean? Like, that there are things that I would have liked to have seen Michael do. He does come back as a ghost in season 6, it does talk to Hurley, but then he's not in the church at the end. Both black men who were killed on this show were not in the church at the end. So there's that. So anyway, I don't know. What do you guys think? Like, would you want more from Michael? Do you think this is a fun, you know, enough return? Like, what do you think?
I mean, I think it is very short, and you can totally see how Harold Perrineau, who is, you know, he was fairly well-known actor before jumping onto Lost. You can see how it would kind of be a little bit annoying. Be like, all right, well, they brought me back, but only to just show up and then die. I don't know. I mean, in the greater context of the story, I feel like the problems that they had with Michael and Walt and, like, figuring out what to do with them existed long before they ever got off the island. Really the most questionable thing to me is, like, the idea of, like, bringing Michael back at all. You know, they could have just left Michael and Walt, you know, said, oh, they escaped, and they could have made somebody else Ben's man on the thing. I can see why he was a little frustrated. That makes sense. I mean, it just seems like they painted themselves into a weird corner with Michael, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I like that they brought him back, and I wish that they would have kept him around more, but as this, like, new Michael. Like, I may not have enjoyed it, since keep it, we were talking about Game of Thrones, I may not have enjoyed, like, the transfer from Theon to Reek, but by the time he went from Reek back to Theon, I, like, got it, you know? Yeah. So, like, I wouldn't have minded a broken Michael showing up on the island being like, I know I gotta help, I don't value my life, but I'm sorry. You know, like, that would have been something that you could have worked with. And then I also like the theme, just that, like, this island of mystery that we've been trying to get away from might not ever let you get away from it, which I think, you know, can be trauma, can be just memory, can be guilt. It has a lot of things that you could link into the narrative time frame. So I like that in the sense of bringing back Michael, specifically the one we thought who got away. He just can't get away. I like that. But I do think blowing him up really quick is maybe not the best way to go about it, because it does make,
I mean,
like,
it's good.
It makes things like the suicide here feel slight. It's really fast. Yeah. And then he comes and he figures out he's being lied to, and he kind of just hangs out until he does the thing that he was, like, meant to do. That's not as big of a thing as, like, his time on the island changed him irreparably, and he needs to fix it.
I mean, this idea that who would I most want to see Harold Perrineau have good, like, I always love to watch Naveen Andrews as Saeed interrogate anyone. So to have Saeed interrogate Michael, that's great. But it does suck that it's Desmond there Desmond has a lot of screen time with Michael, like a significant amount of screen time with Michael this season, who doesn't know him at all. And yes, Jin is there, but Jin is there super temporarily at the end. And I think, you know, and since we do get a season 6 Michael Hurley interaction, I think I would want to see Sun. I think I want to see Sun and Michael, since they have so much of a connection in that first season, and you don't get to close that loop.
It could have been Michael and Jin's time travel adventure just as easily.
Right? Oh yeah, that Michael survives the freighter explosion and gets to meet Rousseau with Jin. That would be fun. Yeah. So you know, it's I kind of agree with Harold Perrineau here. I guess is my point. Michael is a character that I just think that there is a lot more potential there than what they came through with.
And I think Damon Lindelof told you something similar on the season two ending podcast.
And it was mostly Stephen Williams who was like, I will regret forever. And I like that, you know, Stephen and Harold are friends. I like that Stephen directed this episode. But, you know, Stephen's like, I'll regret forever what we did with Michael Dawson. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, you know.
Yeah. And I guess one thing I wonder is how much was this always the plan to kill him off this quickly, or was it part of the writer's strike thing? Because you do think that they kind of solve the Walt thing with this episode. Like, if Michael would have lasted into season 5 and season 6 and they never came back to Walt, I think people would have felt fine about that because they sort of closed the Walt door here.
Right.
So it's weird that it goes the other way and we get Walt later. And I guess we get Michael later, but, you know, they could have kept Michael around for a little bit longer.
Yeah, it wouldn't have bothered me that he left Walt, because at this point, Jin never gets to see his daughter either. So, like, it's fine. We're in the end game of some people aren't getting out of here alive. It just didn't have to be Michael this soon, I don't think. He could have done some time hopping or something. All right, we have some emails to wrap up the storm and live up to our promises. I think we had Luke and someone else.
Yeah. A couple other things really quickly that I do want to say is something that I wrote down in my notes. When Hurley says at the beginning of the episode, he's like, yeah, I kind of like knew that forever ago about something. I just wrote that down because Hurley plays that role so much in like season 5 and 6, which is the like saying what the audience would say to Damon and Carlton when they pull like some hijinks. So Hurley is an audience surrogate. Sort of really kicking in earnest in this episode. Also, we didn't shout this out in the comm that we probably should have, is that like them being like, and he won't even tell us who's the man on the show. It's Michael. Like Ben just like comes in real quick. Like, yeah, it's Michael. Don't worry.
Well, it's
like,
convenient.
Damon and Carlton told me that I could say it now. So it's just, it's Michael. Don't worry. I thought that was really funny. And we should say that the person who really faked the crash is Charles Woodmore. I don't know. Just to make sure that the Stormies listening to the comm don't think we don't know who actually faked the crash. It's Charles.
Oh, the new Storm Corner, things we spent 30 minutes lying about earlier in the podcast.
I just don't want emails from people about that. We also got a correction. We said something about like why Ben didn't remember Juliet from a previous time, and we made some joke about him taking a dip in the muddy waters of the temple. At that point, the temple waters would have been clear. Is a correction that we got from people.
You know what? I accept that one. I was joking about being nitpicky, but that's a good point.
So not muddy waters, but clear waters. Okay, now I can do the last of the emails. All right, so let's go back to Luke. I like pronouncing his name Luke because L-U-C. Luke Storm section of his email. He says, a few episodes back, you guys commented on who else might be on Saeed's flash-forward assassin list. If I remember correctly, in the finale for the season, we find out that Sun's father has ties to Widmore. We do. Just connected the dots and imagined a fun Saeed goes after Sun's bad dad conflict that ever was. So yeah, show fans if you want to see Saeed kill Mr. Pike.
Oh yeah, yeah. That would have been fun. Yes? Oh yeah, well, and because it, you know, the Sun's whole story gets really interesting coming up here too. So it would have been fun to see like sort of her at odds with Saeed, I guess. Because right, Sun, despite the fact that she uses her very modest Oceanic 6 settlement to buy her father's company, I don't think she would want him dead. I think she would disagree with Saeed on that
one. Well, I think that Sun is very much to the pain. She would rather her dad suffer the humiliation
she wants him to
of her
suffer.
Being his, yeah, her being his boss. Exactly.
How can I make him a fisherman?
We do have a Sun. Our second email is all about Sun, so we'll go back to her in a second. And then Luke writes, Do we think Jacob has any control over the island's time barrier or the path to and from the island? It'd be a real dent to his candidates' picking if any one of them might come to the island and then immediately go time crazy, but is driving people time crazy as an island defense too cruel an act for the ostensibly nicer of the two warring god brothers? I don't know that I fully understand
that I can answer
question.
This.
But Dave is super excited to answer this question.
So it's like there's an atmosphere around the island. Like, think of that, right? Like a bubble. Uh-huh. And if you enter it at the wrong angle or whatnot, right, you burn up. That's basically what the time
illness is. Your nose bleeds. Yeah.
Yeah. But the reason I think Jacob has the ability to open and close that is he brings the Black Rock by a wave.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, come here. And then the fucking Black Rock gets waved to the middle of the island.
Opened a little portal for Dez on the Elizabeth and was like, come on in. Here we go. Like that?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think like Jacob could definitely, you know, manage it. But us normal humans have to use bearings to pre-existing vent holes or whatever.
When you were asking about magic seepage, I do have questions about that as it pertains to the man in black, to the smoke monster, because the whole thing is supposed to be he can't get off the island, right?
Right.
And we see Christian Shepherd right before Michael dies. We do see Christian Shepherd on the freighter, but a lot of people are like, think the freighter is just close enough to the island that, you know, he can astral project onto the boat to wave goodbye to Michael, I guess.
I mean, that tracks because Jin is on the freighter when it blows up, and then he is moved with the island island moves.
So they're in the bubble, I guess. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about magic seepage, magic creepage, like Jacob just straight up bops over the mainland to like touch people at important moments in their life. So there's definitely some major off-island manipulation.
He also can use the shark. Just like Tom.
It's true.
It's Jacob's shark.
Oh, hey, baby Sawyer, would you like a pen to write a letter to the man who killed your parents? All right. Anyway, all right. So this is an email from Matthew, who writes in, hi, host. Just wanted to jump in on the spoiler discussion from the Gion episode, and in particular, who Sun is mad at. Jack, in the season 4 finale, thinks that Sun blames him, and this seems plausible. Although Kate goes off to fetch Jin, it's Jack who stops her and says that they have to leave. And Sun says to her father, two people are responsible for his death. You are one of them. Later on, Sun will blame Ben for Jin's death. But at this point, I don't think Ben can be the second person because she can't know at this point about Ben's part in blowing up the freighter. So maybe she initially blames Jack and her father and later shifts the blame to Ben. As for Hurley, I don't think it tracks that he is glad not to see the rest of the Oceanic Six and Gion. There's a chronological presentation of the O6 scenes on the season 4 Blu-rays, and this is pretty early in the timeline, before Saeed becomes Ben's hitman, and not long after Hurley's birthday party when he seems to be pretty happy with the others. My theory is that Hurley really wanted to hold the baby, and he thought he might not get a chance if the rest of them were there.
that fucking jackal never put the baby down.
Well, okay, so here's one theory on why Sun is mad at Ben. Okay, so when they escape the island, they're with Saeed, right? And Saeed was on the freighter, so Saeed could have told Sun the story about how Michael was working for Ben, and ultimately that's what got the thing blown up.
You think he told that story when they were like floating?
Sure. I mean, how long are they even out there? You know?
Or maybe when they're on Penny's boat.
As they were getting their lie together, you know? Yeah.
Oh, so on Penny's boat, okay. Yeah. So he's like, tell you a story about Michael Dawson.
During their Penny yacht vacation.
During their Penny yacht vacation, so he's like, let me tell you a story. It's called Meet Kevin Johnson.
Right? Well, and you would think that like Sun would want to know, like, hey, who blew up that freighter that killed my husband, you know?
Okay.
Saeed has answers.
Okay. So you think it's Ben?
Yeah.
So it's either Ben or Jack. I mean, the point is, it's either Ben or Jack. It's not Kate.
Right. Well, yeah. And I think the reason why she would be mad at Ben at Jack is because Jack's the one who sort of like comes up with the lie, I guess. And
well, but also to Matthew's point is like, don't get off the helicopter.
Right. Yeah. And he's also the one who's like, we have to go.
Yeah.
So.
All right. I think that's it.
All right.
Temple waters run clean.
That's Tempo, it. Waters, Run Clean, Undead Horse. It's been quite a week. Great. Neil, where are we going for us next week? For people back in the olden times, I had to wait 5 weeks.
Yeah. We are going to The Shape of Things to Come, which is a Ben episode, and it's kind of a wild one. I know I said in the Slack, and some people immediately called me on it at the live watch. I was like, well, next week's episode is significantly less depressing, but I forgot about some things.
Oh, you forgot. We were in the storm thread being like, Neil's playing it real cool for the commies right now.
You kind of forgot about Alex?
I kind of forgot about the Alex thing. Oh, I thought that maybe that happened later in the season, but... Nope, there you go.
Another woman is going to die on Lost.
hey, not in the torso, though, this time.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Until
I mean, Alex is fridged. We're going to talk about it, but that's mm-hmm. a fridging if ever I did see one. So we'll talk about it.
Was Alex ever really her own person outside of the first 5 episodes of season 3? Maybe not. We'll find out next week. Until then, where can people find more of your work online? Let's start this week with Neil Miller.
Well, you can always get me over at filmschoolrejects.com or on Twitter at rejects at one perfect shot. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm Podcast, where we'll have a history poll this week.
Ooh, and Joanna Robinson.
Oh, you can find me on verityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. I'm doing some like Mandalorian and flight attendant discussions over on Still Watching. Our last episode of The Undoing does have an interview with Nicole Kidman, which I actually thought was really charming. So however you feel about that show, you can hear me talk to Nicole Kidman if you want to over on the Still Watching podcast for the finale episode of The Undoing. Little Gold Men is happening, where I'm talking about like Mank and a bunch of other things. And angering Martin Scorsese fans on Twitter. So there you go.
Pretty chill week.
Yeah.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You can listen to me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, where we talk about other pop culture. But as always, I'll be here every Wednesday at the end of a very long podcast about Lost, telling you to not fall down.